Shopomaniacs. You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Query. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing just wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a funny morning. It's like, you know, how we record like a few days ahead of time. We're, you know, not hugely, you know, we don't record months in advance around here.
We're trying to get in that sweet spot of like not getting scooped by the news, although we always do, you know, and then not getting, but not, you know, if we record weeks out, everything we say is going to be out of date. If we record one day out, that would probably be perfect, but that's a tight turnaround. So
tight, a little too tight. Not that it hasn't happened before, but yeah. You know, and we almost never like announce guests or anything like that because, man, you got about a 50% shot of getting shot in the foot with that stuff. You know, it's not like we have a staff to surgically edit stuff out. And
yeah, that's hard. Hey, we have had some really good guests lately. I will say that, like the TC39 and the security things really got the brain buzzing.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I was more excited about both those things than I thought I would be, which is usually your job. I feel like in the past, we do shows, and Dave's like, I'm on this. I need it.
Yeah, yeah. I need this.
Need it.
Put this person on. I have questions. I want to talk to the manager. I'm the internet's Karen. I want to talk to the person who makes View. Put them on here.
It's funny. It's a big morning for me. So this is dangerous. I say all that because this is dangerous to say, but we're trying to put CodePen into public beta, which is just an enormous step for us. That means anybody in the world can use it, not forced to use it. A case, that's why it's in beta, but eventually we'll get there. But as far as releases go, for my mind, this is pretty big because you know, anybody can use it. The usage is going to shoot way up and stuff like that. Really proving out this product for reals, instead of all the long period of private beta we've had.
Mm-hmm.
And of course we go to deploy it, and we're all on together on Zoom. You got to do that with your team,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
We even doing held up little twos into the camera kind of like this.
Yeah.
Okay. Like a peace sign kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was really fun. And then an error pops up that none of us have ever seen before. It's an absolutely unseen ever before error. I'm like, oh, that's super neat, super cool. But it's because, GitHub Actions as I speak is kind of down. And so they have like a dispatch API or something where you can like hit an API that says, hey, run this action for me. And we have like an admin tool that does it. And we've just, you know, we built error handling in there, but I've never seen the error handling ever have to do anything.
Oh, that's funny. So it's like
GitHub sends back like cannot do.
So the launch is sitting there in GitHub. It just, you don't have the action to deploy or whatever, or like.
Yeah, it's funny. It's actually in pretty bad shape because it like our code does a couple of things, like it tags, you know, like it makes a git tag for the thing. And then we go look at our tags for all the different services we're trying to apply. And like some of them have the tag and some of them don't. I'm like, So then we had to delete the tags and try again. And then like different ones got the tag, but none of them, it didn't kick off any actions. Like it was 0% actions, which that would have been worse if it like actions for half of them started, you know? Because I just...
Am I right that y'all have Next in the stack? Is that kind of in the...
Next is in the stack. Yeah, it is in
and
the stack.
And so did that piece deploy? Like, does Next do its own deploy, or is it like...
It does. It's a totally separate deploy process than all the rest of it.
So like your front end's on the latest, but you're... So
that would be the worst one to deploy alone.
Oh, okay. You're trying to deploy the back end first, or the Rails app.
But those will just go out first anyway, because they're just a little faster to deploy. It'll be okay. As long as they're relatively close together, it should be okay. Anyway, that's when you hit me up like ready to record, and I'm like, yeah, totally, man.
That's what I was thinking about.
It's actually
the like culmination of like 5 years of work. I was thinking about a fucking podcast. I get it.
Maybe more.
I had a whole company start and die in the time you've been working on this.
on this 2.0,
but it's good. I like it. I've been using it. So
yeah, thanks. It's gonna get a lot better. I think even you will over time will understand it more. Not that you don't understand it, but I do think there's like this period where you have to be like, oh, these things like fit together in a certain way. I certainly feel strongly, although I'm highly biased, but I feel like there's something to this, especially as we start to grow. I'll tell you one thing. I don't want to take the whole thing on this, but
Chris, you can take a little.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Oregon State University is here in Bend, the Cascades version of it. Mm-hmm. It's cool. So there's, you know, that's our biggest college here, I think, or, you know, we have a community college that's very great too, but this is the, you know, a more traditional 4-year deal. They invited me to come speak to them last night and it was kind of fun. And they wanted to hear about the story of CodePen and stuff. And it was a good group of kids. And it had me thinking about, because at the end they wanted to know about the 2.0 and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's this concept called blocks in it, which is, I know, is a very generic name that's used by a bunch of stuff, but it's like, whatever, get used to it. We're doing it. A block is anything that processes code, that we process for you. So it's not React, because React isn't processed. That's just a thing that's on NPM. JSX is processed. That needs to get converted into JS. But packages aren't. I know that's like a weird distinction, but it's like things that there's input code and it comes out different. So yeah, anything like that. It could be prettier, could be, you know, but not even more stuff we designate as a block, like ESLint or something that like looks at your code and then returns like diagnostics of what's gone. That's a block. So block, all of our existing processors and stuff. And we're hoping to have just tons of blocks. But the way that they get pieced together is very interesting. I won't dig into that too far, but I will say that these blocks are like architecturally, there's not a single line of code in our compiler or anywhere else in our app that is hard-coded about specific blocks. Blocks are totally just an API contract with that compiler that just like announce their availability and presence and what they do. And then the compiler's like, oh, I have these blocks. Okay. So now when code comes in that might want to use that block, I know how to slot it in to the process. But because of that, like 100% like adherence to that, we're like infinitely extensible with blocks. There's not like gotcha code that we're going to be like, oh, there's an if statement somewhere that says like, if this block is there, then behave differently. Absolutely not. All right. So we're kind of like have this, we can just make blocks forever.
I love it. I, you know, I think like where you were at with the previous pen editor, it was like, if I wanted to add in, or like you did the view pen, right? And so like you had to build a whole new pen that passed it off to like a view compiler or something like that. Like, you know,
yeah, you remember like that? That was like an awkward middle phase for us. We're like, we really want to support view, but architecturally it's so different that we had to kind of be like, you had to go to a whole different URL.
Yeah,
it had different settings. It was like a whole
view or something, right? But
like, yeah.
And so, like, for y'all, doing that 100 times for every new framework that comes out, like, doesn't work, you know?
Probably not. Like, we tried to make it configuration-driven. Like, when you loaded that view editor, it instantiated its stuff with, like, a JSON file that was, like, the editor should look and behave like this. That way, because we ended up making, like, a Flutter one, too, that was weird era for us, but we're thinking like, hey, we'll just have a JSON file represent a specialized editor, and that way we could make 100 REPLs for mm-hmm. different specific technologies. But it didn't scale as nicely as we hoped it would, and instead this new editor, which is just one editor instead of 100 different ones, can do all of that anyway, which is great.
Yeah, it's like when I go to pen.new, which is, people need to know about that. Mm-hmm. I get the old editor. Hopefully I'm getting the new editor.
Pen.new/2, Dave. Pen.new/2.
I'll get it.
Just for now. Eventually that will just take you to the new editor.
But like, yeah. If I, like, you know, I had 1, 2, 3, 4 HTML preprocessors, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 CSS preprocessors, 1, 2, 3, 4 JavaScript preprocessors.
Like, note that they are mutually exclusive as well. It's a select menu and you can only have one.
Yeah. Yeah. You can only have one, right? So if I wanted to use, I don't know.
Well, a classic is SAS and auto. That would be a little weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so now I can just like layer things like a cake, like do the SAS part and then do the auto prefixer part. And then mm-hmm. like.
Absolutely. And there's more and more reasons to do that over time. Even like a TSX file, Dave, does that because it's TypeScript, and the JavaScript or the JSX that's comes out of it after TypeScript is done also needs to get compiled to do. There's no like TSX processor. That file extension implies two processings.
Well, and that TS, exactly. Like, you have some intelligent auto detect in there. So it's like, if I do a .ts, you're like, hey, you need the TypeScript block. And so, like, yeah, that's exactly. Cool. Like I'm not hitting the drop down to pick my different thing. I'm just authoring, you know, in here. And
right. That's something to know about these blocks is like, you can kind of like what I call go shopping for them. Be like, mm-hmm. I want TypeScript and I want this, and this, and you can just do it. And they're all, you can use every block if you want to, you know, I don't mm-hmm. care, but they won't do anything if there's nothing for that block to do. And it will warn you about that. Not warn you, but just be like, you added pug, but there's no pug files. So like, what are you doing here? Yeah. You know? But if you make if you don't go shopping and you just make a TS file, it's just like, well, I literally have to add TypeScript processing for that to do anything. So I'm just going to do it for you. Oh, and I notice you don't have a config file. So let me just put one in place for you. You can change it as you want to, but like, if you don't have one, you need to have one. So there are certain things that we kind of enforce in that way. Anyway, thanks for letting me talk about that. I don't want to take up the whole show talking about this, but it's pretty sweet.
Again, you know? I got nothing going on. It's those little things. Like, you have the like format on save thing, like in the old pen. I have to hit a drop down and hit format. I got a little addicted to that. Like I just want mm-hmm. my code to be indented, right? Like I just, because I just, I'm barfing code when I'm in CodePen, and I was just like, this makes sense of it, you know? Mm-hmm. But y'all have a prettier block. So I noticed in the 2.0, it wasn't like doing that. And I was like, oh, where's the thing? I was like, oh, prettier block. And so and then now all my code auto formats. And then
it happens on save. This was a little bit of a challenge for us. That's one of the many reasons this took forever is that I like that you can right click on a file and say to format it. Mm-hmm. So that works no matter what. Maybe a questionable choice, but we'll just do that for you. You don't have to add the prettier block if you don't want to.
Oh, I see the format file. Yeah.
That will just run it through prettier. What I don't like about that is it has some degree of magic. You're like, well, what's formatting this? You know,
yeah, it's not clear, right?
So that's, you know, but it's there because a lot of people do it, including you. And I like that it's there too, because, you know, prettier does add like a little second to your build time. And this build process runs on every time you change code and hit save. So it's not like much, but if you just don't want prettier in there, you just want to keep that build super clean, then don't add it, you know? And let's say you really like it. Let's say that you would be annoyed that prettier wouldn't be on a project. I think a lot of people are like that. In fact, I contemplated making prettier just on every pen. You just mm-hmm. get it by default, you know? So I think a lot of developers are used to that. But we didn't for now. But you could, this never existed on CodePen before, is you could just get a pen in the state that you want, all the code and all the blocks and settings and even the UI, everything you want. Add prettier to it or whatever, and then save it as a template. Fine, you have a template. We had that before. So mm-hmm. you can start from a template. And in fact, even just going to the editor, it will suggest your templates now as a little piece of the UI, which you couldn't do before. You know, it would be like, once you've started the pen started. You can't like start over from a template, but now you can. But then you can mark that template as your default template, meaning no matter what, when you make a new pen, it's going to be exactly like that. That's kind of a new concept too. So for the people that are just like, I want CodePen to like always be like this, then you just set a default template to how you like it, and it will just be like that forever. It's little crap like that we probably should have did in the old editor, but we just didn't, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, when you make that decision, you want to move to the next thing, like pouring features into the old one that now you're accountable for in the new one, you know, it's kind of,
it took long enough as it was, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, so that's kind of that. Yeah. Hopefully let me refresh the GitHub status page here. Oh, it's still down, you know? All right. Let's do a podcast. Sheesh. Maybe by all the end of the podcast, it'll be over. You've been blogging a bunch. You've had some bangers there. I saw a lot of people respond to the magic words ones, which really resonated with me nicely too. Yeah. A lot of these AI features are like, there's another markdown file that you need. We really lived through this period of like every new AI feature was a freaking markdown file. Then I listened to, speaking of Theo, I don't watch him all the time, but I know it tends to pop up for you too.
Oh, I'm regrettably in like Theo's top like 0.4% or something. Anyway,
he did one where he showed off this white paper that said, you know, if you have an agents.md file or Claude.md, this is one of these magic wordy MD files that on average it does a worse job with your with your completions. I'm like, oh, are you kidding me?
So, yeah, you know. Wow. No, yeah, there's like, jury's still out. I think. That's where I got with this post. It just kind of, I'm being told to use AI as part of my work. I think everyone kind of can read those headlines. The Verge talks about it. But part of my job is like helping designers like vibe code and kind of get in, like start using our tools to like build experiences and stuff like that. And, you know, it's all the rage, like, you know, use skills, you know, and it's like, yeah, wrote some skills here, install these skills, and then it's like goes and then nosedives, you know, or sometimes it makes something amazing, you know? And so it's just these like, why did it work that time and didn't work that time, you know? And it's almost like you and I could sit down, same LLM, same, you know, Figma file or same, you know, prompt, and we'll get two different results, you know? And that's just, it's how the machines work, but it's also just kind of this like really frustrating part of like, you know, trying to tell somebody, why is it different? And you're like, well, there's a slot machine somewhere in the mix that we just have to kind of embrace, you know? And so, but this whole adding context, layering context is like,
I mean, I don't know if you know this, maybe you do. In Cursor, it makes that possible. You open your agent friggin' drawer thing, and there's probably a little piece of UI that not a lot of people use, but maybe some people do. You type in your prompt, and then you can take a select menu that's like, how many agents do you want to sick at this? Mm-hmm. And they don't do it. It's not like two of them makes it twice as fast and twice as expensive. It means it probably is twice as expensive, but it just means send the same crap to two agents and you're going to get different stuff. And it uses like Git work trees or whatever so that you can swap back and forth between the two. And you're like, which one of you did it more better?
Yeah. Yeah. Who?
Part of me is like, yeah, I get it. It's non-deterministic. That's the deal. I remember when we were all learning how image generation worked, it starts with static, you know, randomly generated static. And then the machine like takes a pass and is like, this should be a banana, you know? And then it's like, oh, let me rearrange them pixels a little bit to be more banana-like or whatever. And then it just kept doing passes and passes and passes until it's honest to God, a banana. You're just trying to trick it. But because it started with random static, that stuck in my brain. I think there's some degree of like random static when you type in, you know, make a Svelte kit web app for my, you know, magic card collection or whatever. Mm-hmm. It still starts with some kind of deterministic static.
Yeah.
Non-deterministic static, I should say.
Yeah. There's like, I think like part of like what they realized, you know, and I will like, I think it is sort of incredible. We are at a phase where I can type words, use language to produce code. Is it good code? Maybe. Is it better than I can write? Maybe, you know, but like, is it code now that I have to read a whole bunch of code? Yeah, totally. You know? And so like, but like, I think that's interesting to me, but I think there is this like, you know, I think just the predictability is so coin flippy. That's what gets me, you know? Mm-hmm. And, but that's how they're built. It's like, they realize if you just do like a strict autocomplete, you know, it just sounds robotic. If you just do like a drive a straight line. Yeah. And so they add a little sine wave, you know, to like selecting words. And so then it like, you know, basically is like, oh, okay, that sounds a little more random, a little more human to kind of bounce around and use weird words. And then that takes it off into a different direction. And so it's kind of how it works. But the issue with I think specifically is like this context, like context management, context engineering, prompt engineering, et cetera. All these things are basically the same thing, but you know, it's like, the news, the Theos. It's like MCP is dead, Agents is dead. You know, Skills, you know, Vercel has a blog post. It's like Skills don't work, like, or something like that. So they put their whole API into the Agents MD and that worked better. And it's just all these like conflicting reports. And I've got a few like white papers, like MIT papers on it, you know, like to read. And, but there's like, you know, it does something, but then there's even like, there's a study that's like human written skills do better than LLM generated skills, which is wild. It's like, why doesn't the LLM know what it wants? You know, because it doesn't know anything. But it's like, why, you know, it's like, that's just very interesting to me. Like the less you can do. And then like, you know, you get into token context and stuff like that. Every word you write, I think Sam Altman said, like, if you add please, it at like burns more GPU or whatever, you know, it's like, so like every token we add, like adds weight, right? And so like, or adds cycles and things like that. So how do we reduce all those tokens and that we send into the machine so that it can like do, like pay attention? What is the minimum viable skill, you know? And I don't know that there's like science to help us out here, you know? That's what I'm struggling with. And so maybe I'm gonna, you know, I can learn, but it's just this sort of like, you know, I think in my job where I'm trying to help people like whatever turn their designs into code, like prototypes and things like that, it just turns into this like, well, you know, they're like, why did it not work? And it's like, well, I don't have a great you're not gonna like my answer because I don't know, you know. It's like, so we probably said please, and that's the problem. That's what happened. So, or we asked it to do too much, or I don't, you know. Anyway, that's just my day-to-day now.
Yeah.
You know?
Sorry.
Yeah, well.
I was ranting about anchor positioning a bunch of times.
I caught some whiffs of this. I didn't watch your stream, but I'm curious what the beef is.
Yeah, I guess it did come from a stream originally. Yeah, I was looking. I think the lineage was I wanted to understand Adam Argyle's aim more, which is anchor interpolated morph. And I think I got there, right? The idea is that he talks about it in relation to flip. You'll remember flip, which was like, you know, you want to move something somewhere. Well, just put it there immediately and then like apply transforms to like undo it. And then when you undo the undo, it can nicely fly performantly to its final position. It was a bit of a mind mess, but it was good for performant transforms, and you just let a tool do it. It's a little bit like that, but you can imagine, I don't know, I have some element somewhere on the page, and or, I don't know, here's the way to think about it. You want a dialogue to appear as if it's coming out of the button you just pressed to get there. Like, you imagine a button on a screen and it goes, bleh, and it turns into a dialogue. But it came from that button. The idea well, you make the initial state of that dialogue have its top, right, left, bottom values be of that anchor. You say the button is the anchor. And then you say the dialogue is the same size as that button at those coordinates. And then you animate it to whatever it would be without that anchor. And it just works great. You know,
because
you
can there's like a position, or there's like, I can say like whatever, top, left, right, bottom. And then there's an anchor parenthesis function, right? That says like, go get the anchors left. And that's where my left is or whatever. Right.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So you kind of like, you morph it, you squish it into that position, and then it goes, reup. Oh, interesting.
And sometimes that's weird. Like if it's an image, that's a little weird, but I did it with an image. You know, you use object fit cover or something, and then it's not so weird.
And then is that like a starting style? Is that starting style or is that?
Yeah, exactly, Dave. You can do starting style, and then you can do the opposite of starting style depending on what you're working on. Like a popover has colon popover open when it's open. Well, you can do not popover open for the way out. So you can say, what does this dialogue do on the way in? And what does it do on the way out? And this is all made possible through those like discrete, allow discrete transforms. You know what I mean? The thing that we both hate the naming of.
Allow display to trans.
Allow discrete is for display.
Allow display to transition. Allow discrete.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Allow discrete. Discrete?
There's a what's different the ways to say it. It is.
No, I just.
The value is allow dash discrete.
Okay, the value
is. It is a transition type or property.
Transition type allow discrete. Yes,
perfect. Yeah, and it's just like a keyword you can slide in there. And you have to do it so that the display changes at the end of the animation instead of the beginning. Fine, whatever. But now that you can do that, you can animate the in and the out of stuff thanks to starting style and that, which is very neat. So when we're thinking of these anchors again, when you use anchors, the anchor could be the same on the way in and the way out. That way, when you close the dialogue, it could go back into the button. Like, how cool is that? Or it could go to a different anchor. Like, why not? It doesn't care where you want to send it. You could send it from one anchor to another anchor, whatever. Mm-hmm. You just have all these things. Basically, yeah. You have three states. You have before it opens, while it's open, and where it ends.
Brain. You ready? You ready?
Yeah,
here's what my brain's doing. Okay, I click a folder icon on my fake desktop.
Yeah.
A folder UI shows up, and then I click a delete icon, and pew, it goes to the trash can icon. Like, you could do that. Like,
that's exactly perfect. That would be amazing.
Okay.
So that's what I'm doing. I have this demo of it, and I'm trying to get it to work. And this is AIM, by the way. This is Adam Argyle's whole AIM, thing. Anchor Adam Interpolated AIM. Morph.
Mm-hmm. Anchor AIM. Interpolated Morph.
And he's just got a one-off line in his blog post that says what I just said. Oh, it doesn't have to be the same anchor you send it back to on the way out. It could be different. And I was like, oh, okay, Adam, I'll just do that then, right? And I try to make it work, and it doesn't work. And I'm like, why though? Like, it makes perfect intuitive sense that it would work. And this is where the story got weird, because it was like, and I actually like bitched at Adam but I just hit him up on Discord, and I was like, bro, you know, like, what, you wrote this sentence and your sentence is wrong, you know. But he's like, let's zoom. And I was like, oh yeah, I'll zoom with the freaking CSS goat on this thing. And he shows me, you do the trick in DevTools, right, Dave? You go to animation and then you do it like 10x slowdown. You ever do that on an animation?
Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah.
It is really cool. And you can inspect what's going on in the animation while it's going really snail-like slow. Like, it doesn't stop you from using the element inspector and stuff like that. So you can let the animation go while you're clicking around and looking at the computed styles of stuff. And when I looked at, okay, so my animation was morphing in from the right place and it went to the open right place. And then as soon as I wanted it to animate out, it was doing something weird and not doing what it's supposed to do. So I'm inspecting it during the animation, the outgoing animation. And you can see this is the classic moment that really angers me, is that you can see anchor name colon, you're trying to anchor it to something, but the anchor, the custom ident dash dash whatever, is grayed out. So when that's grayed out, it means the browser can't find that anchor. It doesn't tell you why, it doesn't have any information at all, it's just grayed out. It's just great. There's no diagnostic information whatsoever. That happens a lot in CSS, where you're just like, why does this not apply? And you're like, I don't know.
I had it was a weird like variable inside a shadow DOM that was showing up grayed out, and it was not grayed out. So you got to be careful there too. But anyway.
Oh.
It
was not grayed out. Yeah, because I could see that.
It was shadow DOM affecting grayed, it. It was grayed out, but the property was being applied. It was this weird like, I was like, the properties aren't applying. And I stressed out for like 2 hours. And then I was like, no, if I set it to italic, my type turns italic. So it's actually being applied. Anyway, yes. But when properties can't apply, they generally turn gray, except when you're like elbows deep into a shadow DOM. But yes.
Yeah. Correct. But what's confusing is like, why is this other, the anchor would work on the way in. So like, why not on the way out or whatever, this different anchor. And they're like right next to each other in the DOM. I had yet to understand at this point in my virgin life here why sometimes anchors can't be found. And this rabbit holed me into this journey of like, there's just sometimes where CSS and HTML and the browser and DOM and all that just can't find an anchor. It just refuses to find it. And it's, here's the, like the shortest way I've figured out, and other people have written about this. Tamani and James at Oddbird and stuff have good articles about this that helped me understand it. But the idea is that the thing that you're anchoring to must be, quote unquote, fully laid out before it's allowed to have its anchor. Right. And so that, you know, if you're thinking about how HTML gets like parsed, like line by line and stuff, it might get to this point where it's trying to apply CSS to an element that's like, it doesn't have enough information to be considered like rubber stamp completely laid out just yet. One of those situations is like, what if it's a child of, you know, the thing that you're trying to anchor is being anchored to its parent. And the parent can't be done. It can't be done being laid out until the child is laid out. So it's this weird thing where it's like, oh, I can't. I don't know how. But then if you make the child like position fixed, now it's irrelevant to its parent. Now then the parent can finish laying out before it anchors. So it's this dance of like what? So a lot of, like the short story is like the cleanest way to do this is to make sure that both the thing that you're anchoring to and the anchor are positioned in some way, and that the anchor is first.
They're so the anchor siblings, gets done.
Ideally they're siblings, honestly, which sucks because I thought the whole point of this anchor positioning is that you just put crap wherever you want in the DOM. Nope, not really. It's much better if they're siblings, much more like reliable, and that the anchor is first. That's crucial.
But it's a step up from like React portals or Vue portals, like where we are like chucking stuff down to the basement, right? We're like fake sending it to a basement.
I say it's like two steps up from that, you know, it's much better than that.
And we have a top layer, you know, there's like a lot of bonus. Anyway.
There is a lot of bonuses to it, but I really, really don't like it. Like, honestly, because it's this new, like, way that CSS can fail that it's not ever been able to fail like that before. It's not that the DOM doesn't matter, because certainly there's been, like, you know, I don't know, sibling combinators where you change the DOM and then it has effects on the CSS. Like, that's okay to me. But this idea that you need to understand the concept of, like, fully laid outness and that type of thing, otherwise your CSS just fails, is a step too far. And I think there's a world in which they could fix it. They could make a second or a third pass on this, you know, like just wait a second for it to be laid out and then attach the anchor.
What about a new that would property be okay called allow ancestral? And that's how you get the anchor. It's
Please
spelled
stop.
Very similar, but it's fucking totally different for some different reason. But you go allow ancestral, you know, and that lets the anchor to an ancestor, you know, like.
Great. Let's do it.
Ship it.
Yeah. I don't even. Just call it whatever you want. Allow piscrete.
No, that's it fun. Has. Yeah. Allow. It has to be very confusing. Like first step. Very confusing. Like, let's put that on the vision board, right? Like, that's number one on the vision board.
Yeah, okay.
number two is easily forgettable, right? So we want that. We want to make sure. Like, make it very long so we always forget
unintuitive, it. For sure. Like, if you think you might be able to guess it, you know, that's out.
And then, like, mix in a word like interpolate in there. Like, make that very important, you know? Like, you know, we want those words kind of mixed in, right? You know, so
will change.
And then maybe like CSS, if every like 5 years, it could just latch onto like a buzzword, you know, or like JavaScript too. It's like, we're doing observables now. Everything's an observe pattern or, you know, or like this year, hey, everything's, you know, that'd be cool.
As long as y'all keep wet floors. A little box reflect.
Wet
I'm cool.
Floor, as long wet as they floor, stay. Wet floor. Send us your best wet floor code pen twos.
I don't know what to say about this, but it really does annoy me. And I'm curious if they could fix it. We do see improvements like that happen in CSS. So I just kind of want to be the voice of like yelling about it to see if that might happen.
Squeaky wheel gets grease. That's the idea. Squeaky wheel and blog posts. I actually, not to
Well, I did it. So
hold on, I'm checking trade secrets. I get a lot of browser people in my company messaging me, like, do you have any examples of XYZ? You know, and it's like, if I know about a post, I'll share a post and stuff like that. But like, you know, and I've heard the same from Jen Simmons, and you know, I think people over on Firefox too, like, writing about it makes a huge deal because they can like be like, look, somebody look had this post. Problem. Look
yeah, at this it's a URL
that somebody yeah. actually took time to write about this problem. And it's not mm-hmm. just sloppy slop, you know, like I'm just telling right. you that's very valuable to the people who work on these things. That's what I want to express to you. So,
yes, I am a big fan of that, of any reason that blogging is actually powerful and cool. Yes.
Yeah.
Turns out it is actually powerful and cool.
Yeah. And I think we heard about it in the TC39 one, right? Like, it was like, if you want like a way to impress us or whatever, like, you know, if you're trying to mess with signals or whatever, like write a blog post or share, you know, use it and give us feedback. We want to talk to people who want to use it, you know? So
mm-hmm.
I think that's valuable.
Here, let's do 2 minutes I'll show you a demo that I've been cooking up. You know, I had like a micro obsession with resets while I was making my own, you know, which mm-hmm. I still really like, you know? So there's a lot of resets out there. Everybody has a reset, but you know what people have even more of is these classless CSS libraries. Oh. So if I share I think where you don't have to put a class on anything. So there's all these, look at it. There's like one of those GitHub libraries that point to them, but I looked at a bunch of them and I just collected all these classless libraries where you just use semantic HTML and then you just get a nice style out of it. The idea a lot of the times is like just apply it to your markdown output, which doesn't mm-hmm. really do classes. And so you get like kind of nice looking output. So I make a web component, Dave, the lib picker. And it just makes a select. Yeah. It just makes a select menu from that data, from all those things. But I wanted to do it because I don't want my picker to be influenced by the CSS. So I wanted to shadow DOM it, you know, so it's like protected against it. So this little bottom bar along the bottom is, I know you can't see this on the radio. It's just a bottom bar.
Kitchen sink with a little bottom bar that has a select in there.
Right. And so I thought this would be fun for people to, first of all, when you load it, it loads a random one, ooh, like what people think, you know, so like you can just hit the refresh button and it's showing you a different take on this. Like this one's made to look like Markdown again for some reason. but some of them are very beautiful and they do have very different takes on what a classless library could be like. And some of them might be useful to people, particularly if you're in that markdown situation or you're just making a pen. Look at this one's interesting. Just the nav tag makes it fixed position along the top with a little blur behind it. Kind of an interesting take.
Bold choice, so, Patton. I like it. Yeah.
So there's a lot of these, you know.
Hey, what if this is... what about a browser with no CSS and no JavaScript and only this?
Oh, I see. The CSS just is pre-baked.
You only get this. Yeah. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Never. You just have to use semantic HTML and you get what you get.
Don't throw a fit. So are you going to do your own?
It's so tempting, Coyier. Dave, isn't it? I think what I learned from this so far is that I think if you're going to do it, go with the flow. There's a lot of weird decisions. Like, don't do anything too weird because I think it's gnarly. And be really spacious. Like, go overboard with margins and paddings because I think that most of them, the ones that I don't like, are just clearly just too tight feeling.
You know, I think I've seen some with like where the H6 like hit that HR kind of at the bottom, you know, I forget which one had it, but yeah, that makes it tough because it's just kind of
tight,
like,
you know,
too tight. Yeah.
They're unusual. You know, it's also a trick to get the HTML just right. Like, is this the perfect HTML that this person had in mind when they created this? Maybe not, you know?
Well, you need tricks too, like headings with text underneath, you know, like just little things that people do that just, you know, really kind of
this what like how did this happen, you know, like there's just this is just an example using a footer and a side and they're like floated or something, or like sections are flex box or something. It's just too weird, and their right. headings are like display inline. Like, why would you do like that?
Text to line top or something.
Yeah.
That's fun. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I'm into it. Did you remember Quiet UI? Rest in peace, Quiet UI.
Did I not get this, that one? Maybe not.
They had this element of a restyle sheet, which was basically the design system, but they had a way to restyle native CSS elements. And it was, and so it looked like the design system. So if like I have web components, people are supposed to use the web components, please use the web components. And it had a sheet that was like, basically like if you, for some reason don't, you know, you like baked your own form because you're cool or because you, you know, you are just kind of like, I'm going to go off the rails in my own special way. Then I think like, that was like a very cool thing because it kind of like, hey, if you're going to do that, please use this, you know, like, and it had like some layout utilities and stuff like that. There's some of it's in Web Awesome, which, I think Corey LaVisca also works on. Leads me to some hot drama. There's some like layout, utilities. And I think I think what's interesting or smart that they did, maybe I need to write a blog post here, is they offer their layout utilities in like align items. They offer it in a class name. And I think they also offer some elements for like, you know, like they offer layout stuff in elements and class names.
Oh, really?
So maybe it's just like, classes
like a basic flexbox situation you'd use an element for.
Yeah like they have some like basic like, you know, like CSS that kind of applies into that situation. But anyway, I was kind of like, oh, you could maybe offer like elements and classes or something, you know. But I think they're I'll have to dig in here, like which ones are elements and which ones are classes, because I feel like maybe they're all classes. But anyway, there is this like interesting element of like, you know, sometimes you want to do fancy layouts, but just give somebody a class. And I think Quiet UI also did that. And that's what's where it got me on WebOS.
Yeah, that's the line with these, is that no classes are allowed, which is interesting. But as soon as you allow classes, then like, I don't know, the wheels are off. Now you're making a library, I guess these are libraries too, but more of like a full-fledged library.
Yeah, you're doing a full thing. Hey, Dave from the future here. Just wanted to let you know, we talk a lot about the Build Awesome Kickstarter here in like, for like, I don't know, 20 minutes or something. But we just got a blog post that they're pausing the Kickstarter. They had a problem with their Gmail going out at like, I guess they were hitting like a spam filter, even though they have like a 99% reputation. Anyways, the Kickstarter is paused, so you can't get into it. But just wanted to let you know that Build Awesome is, we still think it's good. But you can listen to the segment, but you can't do the Kickstarter, and anything we said about the Kickstarter is now out of date. So that's cool. Awesome. Have a good one. Build Awesome. All right. So I talked about Web Awesome. Ready for the hot drama? Ka-chong.
Yeah. Web Awesome is the one that's web components, and Font Awesome was the original company that just made like an icon set that made $1 billion for some reason.
Yep.
And now there's another thing or something.
New thing, a Kickstarter for Build Awesome, which is 1110, but like kind of growing up. And so it's kind of like 1110 is becoming Build Awesome. I think I've seen some people kind of beefing about it. I super don't care, but I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Beefing about it. I haven't seen any beef about it.
I think it's people are like, oh, it's getting corporate, or I don't, you know, or like,
It seems like the opposite. I mean, it seems cheesier to me. That would be my original take, just to be frank, just because I think feedback matters, is that it's like, I think that those names are a little cheesy, and that doesn't mean anything. Like, I'm sure 1110 will be, if anything, better. But I don't know that I want to be like, what'd you build your website with? I built it with Build Awesome. Like, I'm not 11.
Yeah.
I'm like an adult.
Yeah.
I don't want to look at it. I don't like it. But that maybe it will just still be called 1111 internally or something. I don't know. Do you have to install, like, does your package.json say build awesome in it now?
I don't know what it is. I think it might be webawesome.build or something, but I don't know what the proposals are. I haven't dug in, so maybe I'm not doing good journalism. Yeah. But
I did watch the video, but the video is just like, it's becoming build awesome, and here's a puppet. And then you're like, where did you get the puppet? The puppet's amazing.
The puppet is pretty good.
But I don't think I learned anything.
I was pretty like, hey, I want a possum puppet. The possum is really powerful as a metaphor for what 1111 does. It's a survivor, if that makes sense. It's going to root around in the dumpster and it's going to get the job done. Great. You know, it's going to live forever. It'll take a few shotgun pellets. You know, it's tough.
It looks like they blew past the goal, which makes sense because it was fairly low goal for something of this scope, I would say. And for them, you know, like as a company, they tend to do higher scale ones. They probably just didn't want to fail or make it look awesome how they blew past it so fast and all this. But then what do we get? Let's do a live reading here, I suppose. If you send them $99, you get early bird build awesome pro subscription for 12 months. I don't know what that is, though. For $1, you get swag, which must mean stickers because they'd probably lose money on anything else. Then there's some more early bird stuff for 6 month subscriptions for less money. It's not really saying what these subscriptions do, though. Let's look at the FAQ.
Yeah, there's a chart in the middle of the page here. Let's for radio or visual YouTubeo. What do we call this?
There's a chart.
There's a chart Let's do this.
So who cares what you both get? Let's see the pro-only stuff just for fun.
Speedy static site, that's what, 1110. I think I'm going to just call anything in the free tier 1110, right? Oh, you get some starter projects. That's probably an 1110 template. You get
that's secure, nice.
Scalable, that's probably just 1110. Host with any host, 1110. Plugins for FontAwesome and WebAwesome, probably 1110. Full compatibility with 1110 system, 1110.
Well, you'd hope so.
Yeah, full TypeScript support, no lock-in. Great. Yeah. Okay. So the pro tier here is collaborative visual editing.
What is that? That's amazing. Did you make a CMS or something?
I think it's kind of like a Sanity, for lack of a better word, sort of system. You know, where it's like you can
really.
Like,
what's collaborative though? Can like me and you collaborative like across different? Really?
Yeah. So we could. Yep. So we could like collaborate and build, you know, edit the same page. And then I don't know how it builds, but I assume that's this preview and
that's the next thing.
Platform. And then
remember when Gatsby did this? That's kind of interesting. Not to like draw a connection to like some failed platform or something, but this is a hard problem to solve in static site generation stuff. And it's one of those things where WordPress is like, bro, you just append, you know, like, question mark draft, and then you can just look at the preview of the blog post that I'm writing. Mm-hmm. That's much harder to do with a draft in a static site generator. So it looks like they've kind of solved that, which is rules.
Yeah. So in theory, there's some server and then probably some hooks here to make that happen, right? You know? Pre-built premium templates, that's sure. That's like WebAwesome has that too, like premium components and layouts and things like that. Pro developer tools. I don't know much about that. Interesting. Hosted import tools. Interesting. Oh, okay.
Yeah, meaning like you like, go kind of backwards, like WordPress.
Well, I could go WordPress to build awesome. Yeah, AI compatible tool chains. You know, I think.
Okay.
You know, a little grown, but I think you have to have that in these days. You know, human support.
The big thing is the preview thing, I would think. Like that's cool. Or maybe you care about the templates the most because you just want an easy, really high quality template. I could see spending money just for that.
Yeah, I think if people just want to like, you know, get going. I mean, you know, for $100 a year or whatever, you could get up and going. My only issue is I like would pay for this and then not use it in that year because I just got distracted. Well, or
especially
whatever.
It doesn't even come out till January 27.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So then it's another year of you not using it potentially.
Yeah.
I give them props for that though, because that is that's a deadline that's a long way away from now, meaning they are super not done with this. that's a fire under your butt to do it. That's what Kickstarter is. That's the point. You know, like there's some risk.
It's not supposed to be buy a t-shirt. It's supposed to be like back the possibility that we can do this.
Right. And, you know, they kind of demoed a few of these pieces. So, like, I think these pieces are in place. They just need to build the infra to make it all happen or whatever, you know. And I could see as a business, you're like, hey, we want to do this thing. We have a nice little prototype working demo. But we need to like fortify it and get it out the door, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then you throw this
look at the t-shirt. It still says 1190 on it. So it's just going to, it'll be 1190.
I think 1190 still lives. I think, you know, yeah. I think it's getting, you know,
Build Awesome powered by 1190 or whatever.
Yeah. Maybe like Build Awesome is the, whatever the business product in 1190 is the engine, if that makes sense. I'm trying to think of like something that is like that. Like, I don't know. Google Maps is the mapping tool viewer, and maps.google.com is the product or something like that, you know, or, you know,
yeah,
like,
there is stuff like that. So I don't know why it's eluding me so much, but yeah, good for them. That rules. I'm sure Zach sounds pretty pleased with it. He's answering questions in the comments and stuff about how all this works. Well, is this like the best place 1190 has been? Because it's had some twists and turns in its lifetime. Mostly like if we hire Zach, then we kind of get 1190 too, but it's still Zach's. So if Zach leaves, 1190 leaves. I don't think it can leave now.
No, it's pretty deeply ingrained, but maybe it is like 1190 just lives on its own and build off, you know, like,
yeah, maybe.
But like Build Awesome is the infra to collaboratively edit an 1190 site, you know, and so maybe that's the like how you do it. But yeah, I'm a fan. I don't know. I like when things I like grow up. I got somebody. I'm like looking at somebody in my Mastodon who's like complaining, but like about it. But like I just like think like these, like we need the stuff we like to mature so it exists longer, you know. It doesn't need, you know, hyperscaling attached to it necessarily, but it just needs like, you know, like a reason for Zach to sit down and put his hands on the keyboard and make it better every day, you know, like that's what it needs. It needs to evolve. It needs people to use it, communities to grow and stuff like that.
100%. 100%.
And yeah, is it like, does it lose a little bit of indie cred now that it has a company running a...
I don't think so. I don't think they're that big. How many people are at Star-Awesome? Not very many, I would think.
Well, yeah, and you saw the video, right? It has a Muppet in it. I think, like, it's in good hands. I don't know. I don't know. I want good people to work on software. You know?
Yeah. Heck yeah. Me too. And that's what's happening here. Yeah, I still really do like 1190. It's such a, you know, I liked it from day one. It's just this really simple kind of thing. I still think of it, maybe this is not fair, but in this, like, I want to build a website from Markdown files, please. You know, I don't know if that's, it can certainly do more than that, but I think of that, like, if that's the situation that I'm in, 1190 is 100% the choice, you know? And I probably would only reach for Astro at the moment I start needing, like, JavaScript-y components. Like, I want to write these out of the front matter Astro-y type files, or maybe even use React or Vue or something, but still get that, like, SSG first experience. I'd probably go for Astro, but for the bucket of Markdown files, I'm 1190 all day.
Yeah, no, we actually fast.design, which is our fast web component site. We just made it, converted it from DocuSaurus to 1190. And
did you really?
Cool. I didn't do it, but Jane and John did. But shout out to Jane and John. But
it sounds like a children's book. You're like,
yeah, Jane and John.
Jane and John went to the well. Yeah.
Jane and John built a web component library. Jane and John maintained it all day long. Yeah. That's good. But it's really fast. Like I'm not like gonna like I go to this site because I need to for docs or, you know, people asking me for links and stuff like that. And and I've like noticed it's like, whoa, like it's like shockingly faster than the DocuSaurus, but I don't understand why, because it should just be a static sitey thing. But like, it's obviously faster to me. It's like, whoa, it like snaps on me, you know, like it's like that.
Oh,
like,
that rules.
Sheesh. So
you don't get that for free. You know, you get that from basically Zach on his keyboard.
Pay Zach to type on his keyboard. It works out for everybody.
You know what would be exciting for me is if he's like, it's WASM now. That would be sick. Really fast.
Yeah, he's like, I recompiled the entire 11E compiler into WASM, and that's what enables the preview feature.
Lightning fast.
Good call.
Ooh, maybe.
All right, y'all. Pretty good. Yeah.
Wrap it up.
I'd like to report that we are back. The queuing action workflow runs at nominal rates, and we are monitoring the clearing of queued runs during the incident. Oh, thanks, GitHub. We're at almost a sub-hour turnaround on this thing. Not quite, but close.
Good luck, man. Almost there.
Almost.
It's one of those things, man, just by the fact how much you want it to be out, it's going to be a 6-hour event. So it's just the criticality, your inverse criticality.
What would you do if you need to kill an hour? Like your brain is so ramped up, but there's nothing, you just need an hour to go by. You can do anything you want. You could play Bellatro, you could play pickleball, you could play a guitar, you could write a blog post, but you need the hour to just go by. Mm-hmm. I can't like stare at the wall because I'll die. What would you do?
I mean, I probably should take a walk. You know, that's probably what
you should do. Yeah.
What am I going to do? Watch YouTube. But, you know, I'd like to write a blog post. That would also feel good to like, you know, and then.
That's what I do. If I can trick my brain into starting to think about words, the time just melts away.
Yeah. But if I can, you know. What else am I going to do? Sudoku. I've been playing like 20, 30, 40 rounds a day, dude. It's out of control.
Whoa. I'm like,
Zach Gage
variant or regular?
Zach Gage's good Sudoku app. It's very arcadey. I just, dude, I'm like, beep, blop, bleep, blop, mark, bleep, blop, blop, 1, 2, 5, 9. Doing it.
Yeah. So I just, they call that scanning, right? When you can just kind of, you just sense what the two or three missing ones are.
X-Wings, Y-Wings are getting me. If I could unlock the Y-Wing, I'd be unstoppable, but my eyeballs don't do it.
I don't know. I have X-Wings, but not super strong.
Yeah. X-Wings is mediocre. Y-Wing is in there. So, if I could do Y-Wing, I'd be unstoppable, but all right. Thanks, dear listener, for downloading this. Shard it up. Join us in the Discord, patreon.com/shoptalkshow. And then, follow us on one of the good ones. And then, Chris, did you have anything else you'd like to say?
No, not really. Shoptalkshow.com. Bye. codepen.io/pro/pricing/news/2.
Pen.news/2.
Pen.news/2. Okay, bye.
Bye.